there. I'm Dr. Trevor Cates. Welcome to the Spa Doctor podcast. On today's show, we're discussing why diet should not be a four-letter word that we're afraid to speak about. Let's get back to the basics on how to support a healthy approach to eating. My guest is Brooke Alpert. She is a nationally recognized nutrition expert and best-selling author. She's founder of Be Nutritious, a nutrition counseling and consulting practice in New York City. Her expertise and nutrition knowledge have led her to be featured on TV shows like The Dr. Oz Show, The Today Show, Access Hollywood, and more. She was named one of the new up-and-coming stars in the beauty and health field in W Magazine and has been quoted and featured extensively in both national and international magazines like People, Shape, Glamour, Town & Country, Toddler, and more. On today's podcast, we discuss the basics of healthy eating and self-care so you can live a more vibrant life. So please enjoy this interview. Brooke, it's so great to have you on my podcast. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so I know we want to start off with talking about the word diet because it's become what, a four-letter word that people don't want to talk about? And you want to change that, right? You want to get it back to the original definition. So what's that all about?
I do. You know, whenever we say the word diet, you know, whenever I refer to a diet to my patients, to a diet to a friend, you hear the word diet on the street, it's never in a positive way, right? And so diet has turned into a new curse word, a new four-letter word. And I'd really like to take it back, right? And so when we talk about diet, the way that I was trained in school, it's what's on your plate. It's how you're eating. Occasionally, it's a restrictive if you're celiac to be gluten-free, if you're a vegetarian, but at the end of the day, diet is what goes on your plate. We have gone so far from actually looking at food as food to, and it takes us away from understanding what we're diet, like how to diet and how to eat, that people are going on these crazy, you know, roller coasters of what they're eating every day, and it just sets them up for failure. And so I have people that come to my office that have been dieting, using it as a four-letter word, and end up gaining weight and weight and weight and completely transforms in a negative way their relationship with food. I want to take that back.
Right. And I really agree with that. I end up sometimes saying the foods to eat and not eat rather than rather than diet, just because people think that I'm going to put them on some sort of weight loss program. Because I mean, a lot of times that's what it is, some sort of people feeling deprived of what they really want to be eating. So, yeah, and it's not really how it's intended. We need to eat. And diet is what we eat.
Exactly. It doesn't mean a week's worth of frozen meals that have no nutrition value to it, right? It doesn't mean only juices or only, you know, eating foods that start with the letter B. It doesn't mean any of this. We've gotten so far from it. And I always joke, you know, I dedicated my most recent book to anyone who said the diet starts Monday, because Mondays are hard enough. And then we're all of a sudden putting this crazy restrictive plan on Mondays. And then we ruin our Sundays and then the whole weekend's over. So I really, food is food. Food is nourishment. Food is so much more. But food is also part of your diet. So let's make it good.
Right, right. And it's something, it's our daily choices, not the program we're going to start on Monday or even Saturday. Exactly. Or, you know, we're going to go away on a retreat and eat healthy. But it's what we're doing on a day-to-day basis that makes the biggest impact, right?
Right, and that's the long-term approach. I mean, I can get someone to lose weight in a week, you know, by really starving them, but that's not going to be successful.
Right, and so you and your book, your title, you have diet in the word of your book. The Diet Detox is the name of your book, right? And you have certain rules that people can follow, and they're not. I've looked at your rules, and you know, there's nothing super challenging. It doesn't sound like punishment here. We're just talking about guidelines. And so let's talk about some of these. And I think the first one that you have on here is to eat protein and fiber at every meal. So why do you include that in here?
The goal with the rules is to bring it back down to fundamentals. You know, I have clients that come in and say, well, I can't eat carbs. And then they come in and they're eating tons of fruit and dairy products. I'm like, those are carbohydrates, you know? Like, so I really just wanted to break it down to basics, bring it back down to the fundamentals of how you need to eat. And the number one thing I get when a client sits at my on my couch in my office is, well, what should be on my plate? And that's really sort of the reasoning behind rule number one, which is protein and fiber at every meal. If you know that you've got a good quality protein source, let's say eggs, let's say full fat, you know, organic yogurt that's unsweetened, let's say really good chicken, grass-fed beef, et cetera, on your plate, plus some sort of fiber coming from a fruit or a vegetable, you're good. You don't need to overthink it. So if you have eggs and spinach, if you have chicken and broccoli, if you have, you know, any sort of those variations, you're good to go. And so I just wanted to give people the right away how to look at your plate and how to know if it's good.
Okay. Okay, good. And of course, you know, there are people with dietary restrictions as far as allergies and intolerances and things like that. So being mindful of that, or some people are vegetarian for philosophical reasons. So of course they would need to modify the protein and fiber based upon their unique needs, right?
Of course.
Yeah. And another big thing you talk about is you clock your meals. So explain to people what you mean by that.
You know, I always joke that I treat my clients like I treat my kids, because if my kids aren't fed on a schedule from the day they were born to my oldest one is almost 10 years old now, they need to eat on a schedule, because if they don't, everything, you know, chaos ensues. And the same thing happens with people, right? We need to eat on a schedule. Our body needs to know when the nourishment is coming. Mentally and emotionally, it sets you up for success at your next meal. So by knowing that you're eating around every 4 hours, you don't need to set an alarm to be that strict. But I don't like people to go really more than 5 or under 3. It's sort of 4 is that perfect little sweet spot. It just sets you up for success. It doesn't get you too hungry. Your blood sugar levels can remain stable. And then you don't arrive at like the dinner table and dive headfirst into the bread basket. So I really like people to be on a structure, but I don't want them to obsess over it. And then the only extra addition to just eating every 4 hours is that I ask everyone to give 12 to 14 hours between dinner and the next morning's breakfast. I love the, you know, the science behind intermittent fasting. I think it's fascinating. I think it's solid. But what I found in my practice over almost 12 years now of doing this is that people have a really hard time sticking to it. And it sets them up from a emotional and psychological level to fail. And the last thing I need is anyone, again, diving headfirst into a bowl of food that they didn't really want or crave. So early time restricted, that 12 to 14 hour sweet spot between dinner and breakfast really allows you to process a lot of the same benefits of intermittent fasting, but without that sort of binge behavior that I've seen happen a lot.
Okay, well, and this might be something a little bit different for people to think about. So then if people are eating, I mean, really a big part of it is don't eat dinner late, right? I mean, because you also don't want to wait too long in the day, too. It could be inconvenient if your timing, your 12 to 14 hour timing is in the middle of the morning when you're working, or closer to lunch, and then it's kind of confusing as to when you eat lunch, right?
Yeah, you need to make it work for you. I'm all for an early dinner. I feel like I live like I'm in a retirement center. I like the early bird special. That's my hour of eating. 5 o'clock is perfect for me. But I'm also, I'm fully get it that that's not going to work for everyone. I have clients who work really late, doctors who are seeing patients in the hospital later in the evening that can't have dinner at, 5 or 6 o'clock. But so if you can at least try to give yourself a 12-hour window from dinner to breakfast. So let's say you have dinner at 8, having breakfast at 8:30 gives you just over that window that you can really reap some of those same benefits. And even if it's a smaller breakfast that you take on the go on your way to work, you can still reap a great benefits, especially for your metabolic functioning, for diabetes issues, blood sugar issues, all of it. And I think it would be worth it.
Yeah. And blood sugar, balancing blood sugar is one of the key things that comes up over and over again, especially it seems like with Americans, because of all of the processed foods and the sugar that we may have grown up eating or that are so readily available to us that it can create a lot of issues for people. So that's one of the things that you've mentioned a few times. And I think it is one of our biggest issues with diet and the foods that we eat.
Absolutely. My last book was called The Sugar Detox. There's a trend here happening. But so I'm really known as the anti-sugar dietitian. And what happens is sugar is such a drug. And it really reaches those addictive spots in our brain. It makes you feel good and it gives you those high and lows. So when we start having, you know, a diet that's filled with sugar, you know, you set yourself up for total failure because you're just going to crave it more and more and more. So not only in the diet detox do I take out the sugar that people are, or the excess sugar and added sugars that people are eating, but the goal is also to stabilize your blood sugar levels for all the natural sugars we're eating. Because fresh fruits have a time and a place to be in your diet. A lot of foods contain natural sugars, but if we can eat them and still stabilize our blood sugar levels, then that's diet success.
Right. Okay, great. And so these, the timing that we're talking about, clocking, your meals is designed to really help with that too, right?
It's all about blood sugar levels, but ultimately I like to focus on the psychology behind why we eat and why we're making our choices. And by stabilizing the blood sugar levels, it actually helps you make better decisions at your next meal. Right. So if you skip breakfast and you're starving, you're not going to make a healthy choice when you sit down at your desk. That's when you go to the vending machine, or that's when you reach for whatever snacks perhaps are in my office at the moment. But, you know, it just, my goal is to set people up for diet success.
Right. And what you just mentioned is really important, because it is setting yourself up for success is so important, because we all know that we're not supposed to eat sugar. And we all know that we're supposed to eat our vegetables, and there, of course, there are different varying beliefs and different types of diets and things, but, actually following those things and getting out of old patterns and establishing new ones is hard for many people, for most people, really. So any other tips on helping people getting into this new pattern? Especially with, you know, I think one of the things that's really hard is you might have one person in a family that's decided to eat healthy. Maybe it's mom, right? You know, the woman that's like the household of the family is like, I'm going to start eating healthy, but the kids don't want to go along with it. Maybe, you know, her partner doesn't want to go along with it. So what can we do to kind of really shift into that new lifestyle?
Well, I think that we need to realize that eating healthy doesn't mean steamed broccoli and like baked chicken breast, right? Food should be delicious. And that's my job as a dietitian, to make sure that the meal plans that I'm giving to my clients or to my readers, it makes sense and taste good. Because, yeah, I mean, steamed broccoli and, you know, baked chicken breast, sure, that's, you know, nutritionally wise healthy for you, but it's not something you're going to be craving. It's not something I can get my kids to eat. They want to eat foods with flavor. You want to eat food that makes you feel good and taste good. And so it's our job as healthcare professionals to teach people how to eat food that not only tastes good, but is good for them too. So any, you know, mom or head of the household or anyone who's trying to make healthy changes to their lifestyle and to their diet plan, let's make sure that you're enjoying the foods that you're eating, right? So find your favorite foods and let's try to make healthier versions of them. You know, like I have a client who's obsessed with like a baked ziti. And so we found the recipe for spaghetti squash, you know, and we just cut down a little bit of the cheese, but it's still tomatoey and cheesy and goopy. But yet at least it's loaded with fiber from spaghetti squash instead of, you know, sugary carbohydrates. So we can, you can have your cake and eat it too, basically.
Yeah. And I think that is important, but that also means that we are cooking a lot more than maybe people are used to. So any tips on that, on helping people get back in the kitchen? Because I know that there are so many people that eat out and they grab fast food, or they say, I just don't have time to cook.
Right. I mean, look, I'm located in New York City. This is restaurant central. Most of my clients use their oven as shoe storage. So I'm quite honest here about what people are capable of doing. The beauty of living in a city in like of New York is that you really can ask any restaurant for anything and pretty much get it. But I tell my clients, no matter where they are in the country or in the world, if you are polite when you're dining out and try to make informed choices and ask smart questions, you really can get, you know, what you want on your plate. So if there's a beautiful chicken dish, but it's served, let's say, with mashed potatoes or something creamy, and you don't want that part, politely ask for it to be switched with sauteed vegetables. Most restaurants will accommodate you. So You just have to be an informed consumer. It's the same thing going to the supermarket. You have to read the ingredients, forget the nutrition labels. That's just confusing and makes no sense in a whole lot of numbers. You need to know what's in the food you're eating, so read the ingredients. Same way you would do at a restaurant, ask the right questions if you don't have all the answers in the menu in front of you.
Right, absolutely. And then with cooking and getting back into the kitchen, any tips on for people who aren't used to cooking? Any tips on,
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm not a chef. I'm far from a chef, but I'm a cook. I can follow a recipe, especially if it's simple. So in the diet detox, I wanted to show people that it's easy to cook. So we have 45 recipes with 5 ingredients. So not including salts, peppers, and oils, but basically the majority of the recipes have 5 solid ingredients. So you don't need to all of a sudden, you know, buy, you know, exotic spices to cook yourself your first time you're roasting a chicken. Like, it doesn't need to be complicated. So find someone online that you enjoy, you know, you enjoy their food images. You know, Google search, you know, on the Food Network, you know, a recipe, and then see if it has all the ingredients that you can either find easily or already have in your cupboard. Give it a shot. The worst thing that happens is the food doesn't taste so good. So cover it with some, you know, sugar-free tomato sauce. That'll make it better. You know, it just, you just have to get your hands dirty, and then slowly you're going to learn what you like. Investing in something like a slow cooker is really helpful for a lot of people. I mean, you know, in the mornings when I have my act together, which is not always, I can throw some things in before I drop the kids off at school, come to work. By the time we get home, dinner's ready. So, and it doesn't have to be easy. I mean, you should see me cutting an onion. I'm wearing goggles. I'm normally cutting my fingers. It's a mess, but I can get it done. And that's all I'm asking people. Just get it done. It doesn't have to be your gourmet meal. And at the end of the day, if you can scramble eggs and saute some spinach, you still have a great plate.
Right. I know it's a matter of getting started. And speaking of which, you know, you talked about breakfast on the go a little bit ago. What is a good breakfast on the go?
Breakfast on the go. I mean, if you can tolerate dairy, you know, yogurt with some chia seeds is always a great option. A chia pudding is a great option. Most of my clients, especially here in the city, I always recommend the little squeeze-it packs of almond butter that look like those ketchup packets. And an apple for a really small, quick breakfast. You know, an apple doesn't, you know, go bad. It won't get dented and bruised in your purse or your bag. And those almond butter packets can stay. And so normally we keep those in the office for my clients that actually didn't even have breakfast yet. So they can get here and they know that they have something waiting for them. But it doesn't have to be complicated. You know, if you have time to make a smoothie and take it on your way, great. If you grab a pre-made smoothie, fine. Hard-boiled eggs, if you can make them on Sunday, grab that with an apple or a cup of berries on your way out, great too. So again, I just want to bring people back down to basic food ingredients, because that's all you need to eat. It doesn't need to be complicated.
Right, of course. And one of one of the 10 rules that you have is to indulge intentionally. What do you mean by that?
There is a time and a place for a slice of cake, a slice of pizza, French fries, whatever your food drug of choice is. Are non-negotiables for me are any sort of sodas or really artificial sweeteners. So those are the no-goes for me as an intentional indulgence. But if you love really good French fries, then there is a time and a place to have them. If you love a really good cupcake, there's a time and a place to have them. People don't need to sit on my couch or buy my books because they're having, you know, a cupcake or a piece of cake on their birthday or some French fries on Saturday night. They need to sit on my couch because they're eating sugar all day long or indulging every single day. And so I want to teach people, again, that there's a time and a place. And if you can find the best thing for you, what you really enjoy, not like some, you know, stale piece of bread, but the best baguette from your favorite market or the best chocolate cake, which would clearly be my choice, you know, or the best French fries. Get them. Get what's really going to satisfy you. And what I've found in my years of practice is that once I allow people give themselves that permission to indulge, they tend to eat less of it. So I had a client who hadn't had French fries in a year because she was so nervous about her relationship. And I sent her down the street to go get fries after at one of my favorite restaurants after our session. And she had lunch and with a side of, you know, the truffle French fries, which were amazing at this place. But she said halfway through, they got colds and they were no longer worth it. Whereas in the past, her relationship would have been with the French fries to eat it regardless because it was such a something she put on a pedestal. When you don't put food on a pedestal, you're able to have a healthier relationship with it.
I think that's such a great point. And I think that's something that people with eating disorders, they tend to do that. And that is one of the things that leads people into an eating disorder and keeps them there is that kind of thinking of food on this pedestal like you're talking about.
Absolutely, and I see a lot of disordered eating in my practice where people have these strange and difficult relationships with food. And at the end of the day, one serving of French fries isn't going to put you over the edge. I actually got some pushbacks from other colleagues and other health professionals when I was asking for, reviews on my book from them because I allow gluten occasionally and because I wasn't, forbidding all grains or other foods. And there's a whole reasoning behind it because if you're number one, you can tolerate gluten, then one slice of bread isn't going to kill you, especially if it's good quality Ezekiel bread, for example. But by having the occasional slice of bread, it's not going to put the food on a pedestal. And then all of a sudden, if you there isn't ice and you're at a work conference and you have to have a sandwich, it's not like, oh, I blew it today. Well, forget it. Now I'm just going to blow dinner. And then it starts the cycle of negative choices and choices that don't do anything positive for you. But if bread is just a slice of bread that doesn't taste that good because you're allowed to have it occasionally, then people aren't going to overeat it.
Right. Okay. So you mentioned that with your clients, you have a lot of clients that have disordered eating, and that's different from an eating disorder. So can you explain what that is and where does that come from? Like, based upon your experience, why is it that some people have that and some people don't?
I think it's because of all the diets people go on, right? And they put themselves with these labels that I only eat this, or I only eat carbs on weekends, or anytime we take ourselves away from food as a complete nourishment, we sort of lose the connection with it. And that's when our relationship with food becomes negative. And so that's when disordered eating really takes place. That, God forbid, there's croutons in your salad, you forgot to ask for them and you eat some of them. I have clients that will beat themselves up over that. Or the fact that they didn't get the sauce on the side or that they ate some of their kids' leftovers. It happens and we can't be perfect all the time. And that's where disordered eating, I don't work, eating disorders is its own specialty and I refer out for true eating disorders. But disordered eating, unfortunately, in New York City especially, but for a lot of people who have been on hundreds of different diets, who have tried everything, who buy every single book that comes out, or who gives themselves these crazy restrictive labels, they end up with a relationship with food. Where I had a client that was afraid to eat carrots because they're high in carbohydrates. And I had to look at her and say, "You're not sitting on my couch because of carrots. Let's be honest here." She was 100 pounds overweight. It wasn't because of carrots.
So when is it that you would refer out when you see that this is not just disordered eating, but actually eating disorder? Where is that line?
It's tricky. I have a good, radar for it. Most of my clients have to write food diaries and I weigh them every time. So if they're rapidly losing weight, if the food diary seems really off, then I'll start consulting with other people that I work with. So whether it's a psychologist, ask for some advice. As professionals, we need to know what we're not qualified to work with, or when something becomes too big for me to handle on my own. And that's what's great about having, a whole network of resources of amazing other doctors and practitioners that I can use as, a sounding board to sort of always, reaffirm my idea that this client is not right for this practice. And it stinks for business, but it's the best thing for the client, and that's most important.
Right, and I was going to say, and it's good for people to know too when they have an issue that goes beyond just being more structured with their eating, then they need emotional support. They need to see a therapist and to address these some of the emotional, maybe mental, emotional issues that are going on along with around eating. I think it's really important for people to recognize that there is a point where if you just if you're if you're really struggling with following a program, or your weight is going up and down or one way or the other, that it could be something you need additional support for. So I, don't be afraid to, if you're listening, watching, don't be afraid to reach out and ask someone to help you. Anything else you want to say about that?
No, absolutely. This stuff can be overwhelming. And, in the society that we've lived in for all these years, really puts a lot of pressure on us. And so, as a practitioner, I really do my best to, see the signs of when someone needs additional support. But, I love teaching other women that it's okay to ask for help because, as a working mom, it's really hard to do, but I can't be successful if I don't. So I really try to, pass that on to anyone I'm working with, whether they need additional support or not. But asking for help, there's nothing wrong with it. It's actually a sign of strength, in my opinion.
Right, and I think that as women, we're oftentimes caregivers, so we're taking care of our children, sometimes even our own parents, as we, as they get older, and to be taking care of all these other people, it's important to take care of yourself because you can't take care of all these other people if you're not healthy yourself. You're not going to have the energy, the stamina, the mental stability, the emotional stability to be able to help others if you're not taking care of yourself.
Yeah, I'm a terrible practitioner and parent when I've run myself down to the ground. I don't do anything well. So reminding myself to sort of take a little bit of those mental health moments. It doesn't even have to be a day, but whether it's just a half an hour break that I schedule in the middle of my day to either just zoom out on Facebook or have a cup of tea. Just those few moments, ideally it's a walk or something a little bit better, but just even something small, just a little bit of me time, whatever you choose to do with it, really makes me better at what I do for the rest of the day. So I really think that's important.
Yeah, and I think it's for people important for people to know that we do this. You and I do this. And so it's not like we're asking people to do something that we wouldn't do ourselves. So,
Right. But
yeah.
we
We
get
get
the
the
struggle.
struggle.
There's
There's
no
no question.
question.
Oh
It's a struggle.
yeah. It's not always easy to find the time to take care of yourself or the even just like mentally that, okay, now it's time for me to take time for myself when I've got all these other people expecting things from me, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, but it is important. So you also talk about other supportive things, not just about eating, but also supplements, sleep, water, exercise. So let's, I mean, I know we all have a few minutes left, but what are these, how do these other things help support people in following a healthy eating plan?
Well, my ultimate goal as a dietitian is to make sure that the food is providing as much nourishment as possible. In today's times and our lifestyles, it's really hard to get everything we need from food, unfortunately. So I was really lucky, and this is where you and I met, was that I got to work with Twin Labs and develop a bunch of supplements that I thought were missing from the marketplace. And I really had free range, which was exciting and terrifying at the same time, to make these products that I thought we could really use. And so when it comes to supplements, I section them into two groups. One are the essentials, products that I think everyone should be taking most days. And then bonus, depending on what your personal needs are, you might need a little extra support. So, one of the supplements that's, a really big one right now is through a Twin Labs company called Reservage, and it's a fiber supplement. I want to make fiber sexy again. And so I made this great formula of a fiber supplement that has prebiotic fibers, 8 grams of fiber, plus 5 grams of collagen protein powder. And you drink it in a cup of water. So the best part is not only is it more fiber than Metamucil, just a little dig there, but you're also getting rule number one, which is protein and fiber at every meal. So it's a great way to wake up, break the fast, stabilize your blood sugar levels. And I like to think of it as that little safety net in case you only have time to grab that apple or in case you only have time to grab that egg. Just gives you sort of that little boost in the morning.
Absolutely.
And
And then
then for
for
the
the
other
other
things,
things.
there's tons of other supplements I recommend, probiotics, omegas, a really good quality multivitamin. But water, sleep, exercise, it's not just about what you eat and what you put in your mouth. It's really a whole lifestyle approach. And I hate saying that because it's so cliche. And it makes people think that I'm trying to like change the way they live every day. But you have to drink enough water to stay hydrated. Water affects your, hunger levels. It affects your blood sugar levels. It affects your fatigue levels. Sleep, it affects all of those as well. So we really need to look at the whole approach, of a 360 degree approach to what your 24 hours of a day looks like, and targeting sleep, exercise, movement, water, food, and supplements is really the only way to do it.
Right. And again, this goes back to the self-care. Doing all of these things is going to help you show up better in all different ways in your work, in your personal life, in your caregiving, all of the different, jobs, roles that you play in your life. It'll help you to help you do a better job, right?
Absolutely. I really didn't have much time, but I snuck to the gym this morning. And because of that, I feel more energized. I'm making better food choices for the rest of the day. It's just those little things, those 45 minutes in the gym for me sets my entire day up differently than if I'd been like, I'm too rushed. Let me skip. I would have felt different for the whole day. So, those moments that you can feel good about are the moments that are going to set you up to make positive choices throughout the rest of the day.
Right. I completely agree with you. Yesterday, I was so exhausted and I kept thinking, if I could just go out and go for a run, maybe I'll feel a little bit better. And I just was like, okay, I'm just going to run for 5 minutes. And then once I got outside and I started running, I ran for a half an hour and I came back and I felt so much better. But if I hadn't just said, okay, I'm going to put my tennis shoes on, my running shoes on, and just get out the door, then I probably would have felt grumpy and tired the rest of the day.
Right. And then think about how you would have felt today because you haven't gone for a run in so many days. It snowballs. And so positive choices lead to more positive choices.
Right, right. Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today and sharing your information. Really appreciate the interview.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. See you soon.
I hope you enjoyed this interview today with Brooke. And to learn more about her, you can go to her website, be-nutritious.com, or you can go to thespadoctor.com, go to the podcast page with her interview, and you'll find the link to her website there where you can find out more about her books and her services. And while you're there, I invite you to join the Spa Doctor community so you don't miss any of our upcoming shows. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes so you can download and listen at your leisure and at your convenience. And also, if you haven't already done so, I highly recommend you get your customized skin profile at theskinquiz.com. It's free, takes just a few moments to answer some questions, and you'll get some great information about what your skin might be trying to tell you about your health, what you could do about it. Just go to theskinquiz.com. I also invite you to join me on social media on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, and YouTube, and join the conversation. And I'll see you next time on the Spa Doctor Podcast.